Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Biff. Welcome to Creativity, episode 108, with Jason Clark, with an E, musician and engineer, and of course, one of the coolest roommates V ever had in college. Here we go.
Thank you, Biff.
You're welcome.
All right, so we're going to talk to my buddy Jason here, but before we do that, my other roommate, as you know, Rob Armstrong, he also was on here before, and he'll be on here again to do part two of Van Halen. His father-in-law passed away, and just recently, as in an hour or two ago, so we're going to do a little moment of silence in honor of Antonio. Fly free, buddy. It's 9/11, and my former roommate from college, hilarious times, Jason Clark, from upstate New York. Rob's also from New York, so I have a lot of New York influence in my comedy and things that I find funny. And speaking of things that I find funny, damn you, Jay! What are you doing like a motherfucker?
Oh, George.
Little shout out to Jorge.
Old Jorge in Crossville, Tennessee.
Oh, yeah, baby. So, Jason, what's going on, man?
Not much, dude. Just hanging out. Had a good day out on the motorcycle today. Took my daughter for a ride. Day off tomorrow. All that stuff.
Right on. As we know, today is 9/11. And, so Jason's background, I mean, we met in college, and I turned more of into a TV guy, film guy, and Jason went to the audio side more, you know. Rob was both. Rob was, like, straddled in between both of them. But Jason was definitely immersed and the star child of the audio program. He got the coolest gigs in audio. Me and Rob got the coolest gigs on the television side, and so he's going to talk a little bit about that. Way back then, Whitney Houston had recorded this, the national anthem for the Super Bowl, and that was in 1991, and strangely enough, when 9/11 happened, it shot up back into the charts, and it became a top 10 hit again, which is pretty crazy seeing it's a national anthem. I don't think, I'm not going to get into politics, but I don't think that would never happen today, ever.
Sadly.
But anyway, so you have some stories to talk about during that time of back in 91, Whitney Houston, and you also have some World Trade, you know, the Twin Towers stuff that you want to talk about.
Yeah, we, as you know, when we were in school, I was, while we were going through our courses and that, I was doing a lot of freelance stuff on the side, kind of hustling. I mean, that's kind of what you had to do, you know, when you were, had so many people competing with you for things in the area. I was doing a lot of live sound for local towns. They would do, in the summertime, they would have like big bands and things like that, when they were having their street fairs and things. And I would just volunteer and go
Right. We were cutting our teeth. And what's interesting, the stuff that we were cutting our teeth with is basically what's left for people to do today. I mean, there's really, there's smaller venues and stuff, and there's bars, and they all have their guy, but
Yeah, but I was just hustling, I'd go out there and do that stuff. I'd go up there and, borrow a small PA system, a little board, and go up to Deerfield Beach and mix like swing bands and 40s big band stuff like that when they were having their little carnivals and street fair things, do stuff like that.
Dude, I love big band music, man.
Yeah, it's the best, man. Nothing like a good brass section, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it's done right.
Absolutely. Chicago horns, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, you remember Peter Moran, our concert direction teacher?
What's up, Pete?
Yeah, Have at it, Pete. But, you know, he kind of took me out, and he introduced me to Peter Yanalos, who owned Artisan Recorders. You know, Pete and I, Pete Moran, that is, we would borrow Peter Yanalos's PA system, and we would go to Miami, and we would set up, and we would run showcases when the major labels came down to check out the local bands.
Okay, just so background for people who don't know who Pete Moran is. Pete Moran was our, it was production design class, wasn't it? Production?
Yeah, concert production.
Concert production.
Of course, yeah.
Pete is one of the coolest dudes.
Oh, it's great, man. He's so good.
You'll ever meet. Funny yeah. stories, real personable. You can't not like the guy. He's just a cool guy.
And sweet guy.
Yeah, and he's always quoting lyrics on his social media. You know, like you'll just see it like, oh, you know. Oh, cool. Yeah. Thanks, Pete. Needed that right on. You know, but yeah, Pete's a cool guy. Anyway, so Pete, his background, he recorded tons of live albums, tons of tours, you know. He did Priest Live, right? Didn't he do Maiden in Japan?
Oh, yeah, but Peter Yanalos, you're talking about Artisan?
Yeah, but no, wasn't Pete with Pete?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, I couldn't say either way on that one. I don't know.
Yeah, just because Pete told a story about recording Judas Priest, and he was under the stage, and he had to take a leak, and he was doing. And I won't repeat. I won't repeat the story, but it's pretty damn funny.
Right. But Pete Yanalos. Yeah, I mean, in those days with his first truck, which was an old '70s GMC Winnebago, basically like a motorhome. Did some big things, you know. He did Pat Benatar Live from Earth. He did Charlie Daniels Band, Blackfoot, you know, things of the day. You know, he previously had worked for MCI, and he actually built the two-inch tape MCI, you know, tape machines that were in that truck, and did a lot of things with that. And also worked at a Criteria. You remember that? Miami, we used to do some things down there. Yeah.
A lot of famous albums recorded at Criterion.
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff with Jaco. He and Jaco Pastorius were friends, a great bass player. He recorded Word of Mouth, you know, the famous album down at Criteria with Jaco. And, yeah, he was, you know, a heavy hitter in that. You know, I think in those days, if I remember correctly, he was one of maybe 10 mobile recording studios in the country. So like I said, as I was doing these showcases with Peter Moran, our teacher, he subsequently introduced me to Peter Yanalos, and one thing led to another, and he was in the process of building a brand new truck. He had bought a 36-foot Pace race car trailer, and he was basically updating, you know, because he had been using the former, the motorhome one for years, since the 70s. And so he kind of took me on board, and I was, you know, soldering patch bays and, you know, helping him build the thing. And he actually bought an AMEC Hendrix console. We were the first company in America that had that console. It was a British console. I think it was a 96 input console, if I remember correctly.
Goes to 11.
Yeah. So we did that, and then EQ Magazine sent the famous Eddie Kramer down to do an article and test the board out, you know. So yeah, we did a we set up a little impromptu gig at the Vinette Carroll Theater. I'm sure you remember that. We used to do a lot of things there while we were in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I did Eddie Kramer, great guy.
I did. Like 8 weeks of Jamaica Live.
Oh, yeah.
With Orville.
Oh, yeah, Orville.
So he's like, Vince, man, you want to work on this thing, man? I'm like, yeah, man, well, sure, absolutely. So I show up, right? I show up to this theater, and, you know, I've got my equipment with me. I'm walking up, and at the time, you know, I was probably dressed all in all black. Sure. Black leather. Long hair, you know, down the middle of my back.
Yeah.
Earrings, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Well, I walk up upon 10 dudes from Kingston. And let's just say they were all armed.
Right.
And Yeah. So anyway, so I wound up spending like 8 weeks with this, with these bunch of guys, and it was a live music show for Jamaica in Kingston. And nice. It was pretty cool, but, you know, it was interesting because they were giving me shit because I was the only, you know, "Oi, white boy, come on over, white boy." I'm like, "I'm cool with all this, man. That's all right." You know, great music.
But, sure, use some Bob Marley equipment there.
Yeah, well, Marilyn Manson and the Spooky Kids played there a couple of times. They played, didn't they screw up Pete's equipment or something, like the quarter before?
Yeah, I mean, you remember when we were walking around school? I mean, they would come in and hang up their flyers for the Kitchen Club in Miami, remember? I mean, we used to see those guys before anybody knew them, you know?
Well, yeah, well, the guitar player, his dad was the art history teacher over there.
Yeah, and Pogo, the keyboard player, he was our English teacher, right? In English lit. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
Right?
You know, the funny thing about that, I remember...
And then Violet, there. Did you have Violet, or was she already gone? Violet was the manager of Hurricane, which was like the little brother band of Quiet Riot and some other...
I remember Hurricane. Yeah.
Yeah, she was totally cool.
Oh, I didn't realize she managed them. Yeah, they were a great band.
Yeah.
Actually, Carlos Cavazos' brother was in that band.
Right.
You know, he was the guitar player. Yeah.
Yeah, and they used a lot of Quiet Riot's gear and shit. And she used to get she got me one of my first gigs.
No kidding.
Yeah, she was cool. She was cool and totally hot, but
right.
Yeah, no, she was really cool. Yeah,
you know, it was funny, you know, I mean, seeing those guys, you know, walk around the halls, and you know, I mean, remember Twiggy was in a band called Ambugalard that used to play around down there in school. Yeah, and Twiggy Ramirez. Yeah. And you know, years later, after I left Florida, I went back up north. My buddy Jay up in New York, you know, we went to Jersey one time to see Dream Theater. This is probably, I don't know, maybe 92, something like that.
What a great band.
And we went down to, you know, a famous Jersey club called, and I just said that, no, watch me blank out. It was an old bridge. Well, anyway, it's not coming to me off the top of my head. But anyway, we went down there and we walked up. We were going in and I saw the marquee. It said Marilyn Manson. You know, of course, in our day, we remembered him as Marilyn Manson and the Spooky Kids, right?
Right, right.
You know? And I'm looking at that, I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, no way. That can't be the same band, but sure enough.
Yeah, and Petey is still the tour manager.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He's been the tour manager forever. You know, he probably started out.
Oh, yeah. You know, and of course we know, you know, Antichrist Superstar, you know, you got with Trent Reznor, that album was huge for those guys, blew them up, you know?
Yeah.
But, Yeah, there was, you know, we were there for a few of them, man. Remember Saigon Kick? I mean, we used to see them at the Button South. You know, they were just a local band before they, you know, Love Is On The Way came out, and they blew up there for a minute, you know?
Yeah, when I left Chicago, Enough Is Enough just got big, but who cares about that? Sorry, guys.
I kind of dug a couple of their things.
Yeah, they're okay. They wore wigs. Anyway.
Well, you know, they still do.
We gave them shit for that. But
Faster Pussycat. I was watching Chips.
I mean, some of their music is okay, but, you know. Yeah. The other band that broke when I left was Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh, yeah.
Corgan. Yeah, there was another band called, I think it was Rose Tattoo or something. They lost their singer, and they, you know, basically the manager asked me to try out for it, and I said no. I'm like, dude, my band is going to get signed, bro.
Right.
Not leaving my band, man.
Yeah,
of course, I had massive stage fright.
We had a few of them, man, that went up, you know?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, you know, speaking of those local bands, those local Florida bands back in the day, the one that I liked the best was Vandal. You remember those guys?
Yep.
You know, I always thought, you know, they should have had a shot at, you know,
dude, at that time. Yeah, what I used to love is, you know, what is it, Tuesday? Oh, fucking Pat Travers is playing on a strip every fucking week.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, that guy is amazing.
Yeah, oh, dude, yeah.
Pat Travers.
Patrick was monster player.
Boom, boom, out go the
night. Dude, we had, like, great shows there, man. I remember, like, you know, we talked about this, you know, earlier, probably a week or two ago. I saw Doro from Warlock up there, you know, at the...
I just saw her. It's like the 35th anniversary or the 40th anniversary, whatever it is, of
Triumph and Agony. Yeah.
Oh, dude, she sounds amazing.
Yeah.
She lives in New York.
Yep. Yep, she got Johnny D from Britney Fox playing drums for her now.
Dude, she never calls. She never writes.
Right. And she was I remember when she was there.
She was good.
She was totally hot, man. God, was she
hot. Yeah, that's what was great, because and she kicked you in the teeth.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it wasn't, there was no, pussyfooting around. No, no pun intended. But,
she's a metal chick for sure.
Dude, Dora Pesh rocks. Just like Joan Jett and a bunch of people there.
Totally. Back to what we were on, Peter Moran introduced me to Peter Yanolos. We chatted a little bit, and then I was mixing front of house. You remember we did those, I think our school, the Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale, I think they put it on. It was like a multiple band deal at Bennett Carroll Theater. There was like Texas West, there was a blues band and some other local bands. Some of the video guys and girls were doing, filming, and I was running front of house. Little did I know, Peter Yanolos came out for that show, and I was mixing, and I finished up, whatever set we were on, and somebody tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around, it was him. Now, he's done all these big records, and he was basically told me, he said, you mixed a great show. He said, I don't usually say that to anybody, so I kind of took that as a huge compliment,
Well, for sure.
So it wasn't long after that that, I went over and started helping him out. Like I said, soldering patch bays and just doing whatever he needed me to do. And
well, that's how you learn, man.
Yeah, totally. And we got that truck going. We got it built. And
Jason, you wax on
stuff. Down there, we did things for Univision, the Spanish channel.
I did a bunch
in Miami. Did a carnival at the Orange Bowl.
Dude, let me tell you a story about doing some Spanish commercials. Okay, I don't speak Spanish that well. I understand more. I speak very little, but, I can get the gist of what's going on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, totally. So we get this. So I come back from L.A., whatever. I had my surgery. I was down for a couple of years. Boom. I go to this thing. I'm like the supervising producer of this marketing company / video production company. So local commercials and sales videos, all this kind of crap, And I just had a brain fart. What the fuck were we just talking about?
I was talking about I started working for Yanolos doing soldering patch bays and basically the building part of things.
Shit. What was that? What the hell was I gonna talk about? God damn it, Bobby.
You're gonna tie it in, brother.
It'll come back. Maybe not. Anyway,
well, speaking of that, speaking of your stuff, I remember you brought me in on some things when you were working for RGB for Eric Lorman and his dad.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember we did the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival, right? I was following Darren McGavin around with a camera. The dad from Christmas Story.
The Night Stalker.
Mention our buddy Eric. I mean, he's done big things now too with his graphic design stuff, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. He. He's
did
all
Calvatore's
over.
Calvatore's new record album cover for his solo record.
Well, he art designed the new stuff for Todd, but he won a contest and he designed the logo for Todd LaTore, the new the new singer. He's been there 8 years, the latest singer for Queensryche, and anyone who gives Todd LaTore a hard time, as a stick in their ass, the dude's a fucking monster.
Yeah, he sings Tate better than Tate.
Great dude. Great dude. Not a drinker. Fucking, straight up. Good guy.
I won't hold that against him, but...
Yeah. But, he's a really, really cool guy. And, dude, he brings
wicked
it.
Voice,
for sure.
Man. And great drummer, too, man. He's a wicked drummer.
Yeah, he's a drummer first.
Yeah.
I hope to have him on the podcast here soon. Probably review his album. Maybe he'll post it and then come on or something, but...
Well, if you do, have me on.
That line is long. Yeah. Oh, for sure. But, yeah, Queensryche, great band. I saw them when we were down in school. I saw them in 91. And there was literally like
I saw them in 84.
Dude, there was like nothing on the stage, and they just fucking crushed.
You know, monsters.
You know, Jeff Tate, you know, got to give props to the man, but.
Yeah. I mean, he started it all. You know, that big falsetto. I mean, all that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I love those guys, man. I have since I was a kid, you know.
You know, it's going to bug me because I forgot what the hell I was talking about earlier. It's going to bug me for like a week. And I'll be like, I'll be talking about in Loki season one, we see that the variant son of a bitch.
It's going to come back to you.
God damn it, Jason. Like a motherfucker.
You ought to have him on.
Knuckle dragon son of a bitch. Like a mother.
Hey, you remember.
Okay.
I'm joking now.
So me and Jason, I might call him Jason, I might call him Jay. So we're roommates in this townhouse in Sunrise, Florida, and there's five of us living there in college, and
with drug dealers living next door.
Yeah. I mean, like heavy duty, you know, not like light stuff. So so it's
shootouts and whatnot. Yeah, police helicopters,
yeah,
all of it.
Yeah, you know. So it's like four dudes, four metalheads, and a chick, Scary Sherry. Well, that was her nickname.
Yeah. Hey, I wonder where she's at today, man. I'd love to say hi to her.
I don't know, man. Yeah. Hey, Sherry, wherever you are, hey, what's happening? And her boyfriend that we called Sir Bangs a lot. Hey, man.
Right, old Jeff Jane.
Holy shit. Oh, my God.
Wow.
So there's this thing that happened. Okay. And it became perplexing because we're in South Florida in the height of the heavy metal years. We're all metalheads, so we're going to school, but we're the few that are working. The people in that live there, like Spook,
Rock.
Yeah, everyone worked in the business. It wasn't a bunch of slackers. They had like three things going on. You know what I mean?
Awesome.
So. Yeah, so it was a pretty cool thing, but you know, but we still fucking partied, you know.
Oh God, did we party?
Oh my God, so we would wake up. So whoever it was, Rock would always leave first, I think. Yeah, I think this is how it happened, and then you would wake up, and then I would hear from you know, I'm downstairs in the front bedroom right as you walk in.
Yeah, you were on the first floor. We were on the second floor.
Yeah, and right. I hear. God damn it. What the fuck? Blah. Every morning, like clockwork, and we couldn't figure it out, right? So every morning, someone left a turd floating.
Yeah. Oh,
every fucking day. Every day.
And
every
the
day.
Paper was still in there, too.
So it's like 4 months has passed, and we nicknamed it Wolf Bait. Right. And so you'd get, instead of getting woken up by like, oh my God, you'd get woken up by wolf bait. Everyone come running up to inspect the daily turd.
Right.
And then one day I go, oh my God. Oh my it's God. Rock. There's no toilet paper in the bowl. Right. Ever.
Oh,
we just never, it never entered our mind.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh my God, on top of whoever's doing this doesn't wipe their ass. So,
oh man.
That'll tie in. Wolf Bait is a great name for a band and a project band. And since it's September, we also, you know, want to acknowledge Suicide Awareness Month. As you know or may not know, my brother committed suicide about 2 years ago, and Jason also has experience with people in his life who have done the same, and we're going to do this, we're figuring, hey, you know what, we're in our 50s, well, I am, and I'm like, fuck it, hey, let's get a bunch of players together who knew Ray, and we're gonna fucking do this project album to raise money for suicide awareness. And it's cover songs of all the shit that I used to listen to in his room, and especially,
right,
yeah, and especially, the songs that I would listen to when he said, when I leave, don't you fucking touch my stereo. That was kind of soft.
Yeah, God bless him, man. I remember, you know, Ray coming down and hanging with us at a party, and he was, I think he was still in the Air Force at that time, wasn't he?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he'd come down there and hang with us, man.
Oh, totally. Is you, me, Rob, and Ray were at the banana boat.
Oh, yeah.
And we're fucking dying laughing because you can't, you're having problems blinking. Totally. And we're still getting the drinks. So come on, baby.
Oh, you talking about the free buffet next door?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, the old skanky lingerie show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, what time is it?
You're the one that facilitated that. How you found out about that, I have no clue. But you were definitely the maitre d', as we
the, the captain of chaos.
But, you know, the funny thing is, dude, as we were there for the food, we didn't get, the chicks were just secondary. I mean, we were so hungry in those days.
Well, no, see, originally how it happened, well, the banana boat was the bar right next door to
our dorms. Yeah,
to the dorm. So,
you know, which was an old motel with a pool in the center.
Yeah, yeah, it was like an old fucking, what was it, Holiday Inn or something, or Marriott or fucking. Yeah. Old. And me and Rob always joked, you know, it was a 5-minute walk there and a 45-minute walk back.
That's right.
You know, because of the, you know, straight line and then blah, 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 on the way back.
Right.
But no, originally, I dated Diana, who was the bartender there. And, you know, we'd be, you know, and then when we weren't dating, we were still, you know, good friends. And so we'd go up there and we'd hang with Diana, and all the Art Institute people went there anyway. So.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, man, it was all about connections in those days.
Brian Topel as well.
Oh, Brian. Yeah. I remember that guy.
Yeah. Brian's awesome.
But, you know, like, listen, it was all about who you knew. Like, I knew the dude that delivered pizzas for Pizza Hut, and he was in, like, one of my classes, and, like, he would, like.
Yeah. Brett.
Five or six. Remember that guy?
Yeah. You Brett. He's from. Brett's from Illinois. Yeah.
Brad, yeah. If he'd make all those extra pizzas, he'd come, like, beat on our doors. Like, you guys want a pizza? We're like, yes.
Dude, he made a killing because he'd leave with, like, 20 pizzas.
Yeah.
And he'd pay, like, whatever, $2 a pizza, whatever it was. And he'd charge people, like, $7.
$7, $8, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'd buy them all day long, man. And then, like, I can't remember the guy's name, but, like, now, so the banana boat, you remember the banana boat was on the left side of the dorm.
Yeah.
But across State Road 84, remember there was that other bar over there?
Well, yeah. And, okay, there was also, it was a bigger space as well. And that's where we all trained. Okay, so they're going to do like this casino, this Indian casino, right? Native American casino. And this guy named Mutt, ask Rob, this is fucking hilarious. So this guy named Mutt was in charge of this thing, got like $2 million from, I don't know if it was from the tribe or from the state, whatever, or investors, but I think it was the tribe. So he gets $2 million, right? And so we're all in training to be blackjack dealers, you know, because we're like, oh, we can make like $60 an hour part-time and still do, and we're up all night anyway because we're fucking degenerates, you know, we're...
Right.
You know, entertainers, creators, you know, musicians, film buffs, you know, and, purveyors of alternate substances, perhaps. Yes. So, you know, it like just kind of worked into everything. So we're taking this class and we're like, oh, yeah, it's going to start, you know, it's going to open up next month, you know, da 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 da. So we have to, you know, we have to also have to play. Right. So we do this like a James Bond night, I called it, you know. So I'm like, okay, man. I'm like, you know, what do you mean you can't count cards? Fuck that. Everyone counts cards in fucking poker. I don't give a shit who you are. If you're playing blackjack, you're fucking counting cards. How can you not count cards in blackjack? You know what I mean? So I'm like, okay, whatever. My dad, being a card magician and, you know, being around cards forever, whatever. I didn't do anything, you know, anything wrong or, you know, unmoral. I just, okay, you knew the frequency of how many times a card would come up. And Dad worked with multiple decks, so you'd, you know, okay. So anyway, so we do this whole thing. And I fucking broke the bank.
You did.
Dude, I broke the entire, and of course we couldn't all, you know, no one could bring anything home, but I would have walked out of there with like fucking $12 million.
Oh, God.
Dude, the pit bosses were like, you know, I'm like, dude, I'm not cheating. I got fucking short sleeve shirts on, you know, mm-hmm. like the luckiest I've ever been ever. And it was just fucking hilarious, you know.
But, yeah, dude. Those were good times, man. I remember going over there, like across the street. You know, we're getting old, man. I can't remember everybody's name now, but another dude from class, you know, he'd like, hey, man, send me a bottle of whiskey out back. You know, he'd leave you a bottle of liquor out there, you know, like free booze, you know.
It wasn't Sheldon. Dude, that's going to cost me.
Andrew. That guy with his 73 Catalina with all the radio station stickers.
Oh, my God.
Fixing the deteriorating vinyl roof.
So this guy had a brown.
It was brown.
And bumper sticker colored car. Literally, the car was held together by WSHE stickers.
Yes. She's only rock and roll. He was like 36 then. Like we were like
really?
19, 20, something like that. Wasn't he in his mid 30s?
I didn't know that. I knew he was older. But yeah, he'd be man, like, I mean, I'm hey, like, Sheldon. I don't know, like I don't know why I keep on calling him Sheldon.
He was older than us for sure.
No, like, Drew. Hey, dude, can you drive me? Dude, that's going to cost me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But and you're going there too. I don't care.
he would call me up and be like, dude. My cousin works at Nathan's Hot Dogs out at Sawgrass Mills Mall. He's going to hook us up with free lunch. So we would roll his 73 Catalina, like 15 miles there and 15 miles back, probably spend a fortune in gas. But he was like proud of himself that we got a couple of free hot dogs for driving all that way.
Right.
You know.
Like, did I hook us up or what?
And then the irony, then he got hired by Hebrew National, right? His uncle was, I think it was his uncle or somebody was the CEO, and he was like selling meat for a living after that.
Nice.
Yeah. I always remember, man, we used to go party.
He's like, oh, it's just like the job I had in college, selling meat.
He took me to this house party one night, and the chick whose house it was like a vegan.
Yeah.
And, like, while she wasn't looking, he hung, like, hot dog posters all over her refrigerator.
And to be perfectly clear, Andrew was a cool guy. Just so everyone knows, Andrew was a fucking cool guy. But, mm-hmm. you know, as of our time, we're shit givers, and, you know, that's how we show our love, you know.
That's how we show our love, by busting chops.
Mm-hmm. Totally. You know. Damn it, Jason. What the hell are you doing?
Oh, George. Hey, you remember George when his Jeep broke down and he was on that 10-speed bike?
Oh, my God.
I remember coming home one day. I'm like heavy traffic, you know, like rush hour traffic. And I see cars hitting their brakes. I'm like, what is going on up here? I get up a little closer and I look, and there's George on his 10-speed bike with two plastic shopping bags hanging off each side of the handlebars. With a bottle of Ernest and Julio Gallo wine on one side and a bunch of
we will Sprite sell no wine before it's time.
That's when he was on his kick of making mixing wine and 7-Up.
Oh my God!
And he was pedaling his brains out, man, about to get run over.
Holy shit! So, yeah, dude. So we love George. So there's this one time, George fell asleep before. Before we did. And
this is dangerous.
Yeah. So George is, you know, he's a good old boy. And
boy.
Yeah, so he's sleeping. He's, you know, got his hat on a little crooked and he just fell asleep and we're partying. We, you know, we didn't do anything really bad. We just colored his fingernails pink.
Yeah.
And he worked at UPS in an open air warehouse. It's hot as hell. And he's hungover, and he had to ride his bike through some bad neighborhoods in order to get there. And it was funny the next day because it's like, damn you! I didn't know till blah, blah, blah. Like halfway through the day, he noticed
the women were all laughing at him. He didn't know why. So he looked at his hand. He had hot pink.
Oh my god! Yeah, a bunch of dicks. Fucking. Oh yeah. Dude, that was so fun. Oh my god. A lot of weird shit happened. A lot of fun stuff happened at that townhouse.
Oh yeah. College days, man. Best days of your life, right?
Right. Yeah, then when I had the going away party, right? So every girl I ever dated showed up. It was kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Funny, but weird, you know.
That was a good party, though, man.
Yeah, everyone except one, but anyway.
Hey, we had video of that. I wish we still had it, though, you know.
Dude, I've got a copy of it somewhere.
Yeah.
It had that. It had 666 cold preparation.
Vin. Yeah, yeah. You and I used to make videos just for fun. We were hanging around the house.
Yeah, the Vin Man.
Yeah. We did a Primal Scream video.
Yeah, Primal Scream's on there. Yeah.
Me, Bobby Joe, right? You know, yeah. Check cameras out of school.
Good old Bobby Joe. Yeah, I always had cameras.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was.
We go into the editing suite. We could edit everything up. It was good, man.
Yeah, that was a great job. Yeah. I really enjoyed going there and then working there while going there as well. You know, working at the editing suites and doing
Yeah, I think Orville, didn't he pass away here like a couple years ago?
What?
Yeah, Orville. I believe he passed away here semi-recently.
No, I know his wife had.
Yeah, I believe he did as well. I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, Orville was one of the fucking greatest dudes ever.
Yeah, great dudes.
He was from actually, he wasn't from Kingston. So roll it back. So he's from Strawberry Fields.
Yeah.
In Jamaica, he's like, Vince, anytime you want to stay in Jamaica, man, you can stay at the family house in Strawberry Fields, man, and. Just such the, you know, fucking great dude. And, you know, he knew music I didn't know. I had no idea about reggae or, you know, I had no idea. So he exposed me to all that and that was cool. And he, you know, he always, he enjoyed teaching, you know, he's always teaching people and smart guy. So then one day we're talking, of course, you know, how I can pull like the funniest shit out of people. I'm like, hey, Orville. I'm like, why don't you tell me about some of the delicacies, you know? I'm like, well, you know, like I explained to some stuff that we do as, you know, Czechoslovakians and blah, 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 and, you know, blah, blah, and French Canadian here it is, we do this. And he's like, oh, yeah, man. He's like, we eat the testicles from the bulls, man. And I'm like, what? You know, and I just fucking, I couldn't, that's all I ever had to hear. I'm like, did you just tell me that you eat balls? Okay.
Right.
So, you know, Orville was very, you could crack him up and he would freeze and he would just fucking laugh his ass off. So I would do this. He, like someone would come in and he's like having a meaningful conversation, try to explain to someone, oh, this is what you got to do for your class and this is blah, 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 blah. You know, and I'd be behind them, you know, straightening out the cords, and I'd just be going,
and you'd lose it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
We had some good teachers, man. I'll tell you, like Eddie Mashal.
Yep.
Man, you know, did Hotel California with the Eagles. I mean, we were learning from the greats, you know.
Yeah, he won 5 Emmys.
Yeah. That was a great story, too. You know, he was just an assistant engineer on that,
5
on that
Grammys project. The Eagles were doing that
at Criteria, and they got mad at the engineer and fired him.
Yeah.
Threw him out, and then they turned around and looked at Eddie and said, all right, you're the guy. And he said he was scared to death, but he finished the record. And, of course, you know, the rest is history. I mean, one of the greatest records of all times, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, have you seen the Bee Gees documentary that came out last year?
I have not, but I've heard it's fantastic.
Yeah, so it takes place a lot in Criterion.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they're talking about them doing the first loop, the first drum loop.
Yeah.
Because they invented it because the drummer had like the stomach flu and he was like hospitalized all of a sudden. But they had the time and they had to get the stuff done. So they had only a portion of what he had done. So they had done that and then repeated it. And then they did the whole loop around the whole studio with the weight and the whole nine.
Yeah.
And that's why that drum beat is different than any other drum beat that came before it.
Right. And, of course, we should point out that back in our day, with two-inch tape, I mean, you actually had to take a razor blade and cut the tape and splice it together to do things like that. You know, that was before Pro Tools and, you know, all these.
That's right, Jason. Right.
You remember how
back in my day,
take a razor blade to a project.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah.
I hope you got it right. Is that the right frame?
Right. Yeah. You'd have to roll it back over the heads and go like stop it at the right spot, and then you know,
right.
Slice and tape.
Yeah, and then when I went to Hollywood, and I wound up working for this Chuck Workman dude who was an editor. He did all the stuff for like the Oscar montages and all that stuff. Same shit.
Yeah.
You know, you walk in there and there's bins of, you know, actual film. You know, you'll never see that today, but, you know, I got to work with the first guy who used the Avid.
Right, yeah, Avid was like revolutionary back then. Totally.
Yeah, and he cut like the Tom Petty video, and everyone was like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah,
you know.
But yeah, there was no room for error. That's for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. You had to be precise. Yeah.
Yeah, I worked on Michael Jackson History, both versions.
One
before he got busted, or before his troubles, and then one after his troubles.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, you know. I don't know. Did you see the Jaco Pastorius?
Dude, it would be years later.
Hey, Vince. Yeah, this is Joe from Michael Jackson Game. we're just looking for this. You know, I'm like, dude, I haven't worked there in fucking, you know, and he'd still call. Hey, Vince.
Help us out.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, dude.
I know, bro. Uh-huh. Hey, did you see the Jaco documentary that Robert Trujillo from Metallica did?
No.
A year or two ago?
Uh-uh.
You should check it out, man. It's great. You know, a lot of heavyweights interviewed, but also my old boss there, you know, Pete Yanulis, they interviewed him at the end. He's in there and he's talking about, you know, when they did word of mouth, you know, when he did that Criteria and stuff. But, you know, the last thing I worked on with him before I left was he had master tapes from Jaco's, I believe it was his 31st birthday party, something like that.
Oh, nice.
And he had, you know, some heavyweights come down there, you know, Michael Brecker, maybe, I think. I hope I'm not wrong on that. But, you know, some big horn, you know, very famous jazz guys came down to hang out. And Pete just took the truck down there and just decided to record the thing. It was just kind of an impromptu birthday party. And, you know, he had those tapes, and I remember, you know, him, getting their entertainment lawyer that we knew, and they were like shopping a deal and stuff. And then the last thing, you know, that we were working on, he was mixing down the birthday record, which, you know, I guess has been out for obviously probably 20 something years now. You know, it's right. Probably very well known with Jaco Freaks, but yeah, that was the last thing that I was kind of a part of, you know.
Yep.
Small part, but you know, part of it. I heard it before anybody, and it was really cool. You know, he and Jaco went way back, and Jocko's brother Rory used to come and hang out. You know, we'd see him, and you know, I used to just kind of be a kid, just kind of hanging out and hearing stories.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. The cool thing, Jay, about creativity is that it doesn't matter how old you are, you can still do it.
Absolutely, it's all in your mind.
Yep. You know, everyone walks away, you know, not everyone, but, you know, a lot of people walk away for some reason or another, just whatever. But it's always there. And once you get the itch, man, you got to scratch it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like for me, you know, all these years later, I mean, I've gone on to, you know, over the road truck driver for years. I'm still driving truck. You know, that's my day job. Construction, you know, heavy equipment, all that stuff. And I mean, I miss it, you know. Well, I mean, it goes without saying, you know, I wish I would have
Are you still ejaculating horses, or is that a hobby?
Well, it's just fun. You know, I mean, somebody's got to do it, right?
Hey, hey, whatever you say, you know what I'm saying?
But yeah, I mean, great memories, though, right? I mean, those are good times for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, one of the times that Ray had driven down, I think it was that weekend that you had problems blinking. Yeah. Well, you know, it's a great time if you're having problems with your mechanical eye functions.
Exactly.
But, you know, so Ray had driven from the Panhandle all the way down to Fort Lauderdale, which is a cruise, after, you know, probably doing 18 hours in his military thing, whatever he was doing. Yeah. And then fucking around at home. So he probably hadn't slept in like a day and a half, 2 days.
True.
So there's like 60 of us on the crew. And we're doing, I don't even remember what band. Well, actually, there's several bands. But we were doing several bands, just like Marilyn Manson had done at the same place, the same theater that the... we did the Jamaica show at, and yeah, it was quite interesting to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
But, and again, I forgot what the hell I was talking about. God, what is with me today?
Well, you know, you're tired. You're tired. You work
today. Well, I am tired today. I only had like 4 hours of sleep because I finished, on October 30th. Everybody, on Vaudeville Press, YouTube, and all the usual suspects, we will have Woke of the Worlds, a parody of War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells, and we're going to be doing 4 radio shows, quote-unquote, every year, one a quarter, and so this is just something to have fun and do some improv with some people, and but basically what I've done is I've taken the exact script from the 1938 War of the Worlds broadcast and vincified it and made it insulting and offensive and hopefully funny. So anyway, we're doing War of the Worlds, but you know. Oh, and to be fair, because I am talking with Jason, I have had some adult beverages.
Well, you must. I mean, it's really required.
Right. And there's many hours of footage of me, Jason, and Jorge partaking in such activities. And dude, I still want to edit all that shit in. I've got the raw footage of that. Yeah. And I still want to edit that into a video for I'm Not Drunk. I'm just drinking.
I'm just drinking.
And what's funny is, like, I meet this dude, and he's kind of like a client for what I'm doing. He can, you know, like, he needs a content creator, so I'm talking to him. And he quotes, "I ain't drunk, I'm just drinking." And we went back and forth. Dude, I was laughing my ass, because no one has ever.
Hey, you know.
And not the blues version, the metal version from Wrathchild America.
How many people know Wrathchild these days, right? In our day, they were barely a blip. But I mean, like, all these years, in 2021, to find a Wrathchild America fan, come on.
Dude, that song.
It's a needle on a haystack there.
Yeah, exactly.
And we should point out that Shannon is now the drummer for Godsmack.
Hair of the Dog is a great band. You ever hear those guys?
Oh, I saw those guys open for Rat in a little bar in Pennsylvania years ago.
Dude, I really like that band.
Oh yeah, yeah, they were great. I saw them when they had their big hit "Southern Cock." Maybe you know that one. That's a good prom song.
Nice.
Yeah.
Something you can hum along to.
Right.
Right.
But
how does it go?
Yeah, me and my buddy Jay up in New York, we went down to Pennsylvania to some dive bar, man, cinderblock bar. They were selling cans of Budweiser for $2 out of a wash tub.
Metal.
Great show. Great show.
Nice.
Those
are
the best.
Where you can smell the bathroom from 30 feet away. Fuck.
Oh, yeah.
You got to go piss in the trough.
Yep.
Dude.
Yeah, it's like an old bathtub. You know
right.
What I mean? Clawfoot.
Someone passed out in there.
Right.
Jorge, get out of there. Lie, what are you doing, Lie, motherfucker?
So, you know, we need to point out, since we've been talking about Jorge, he's like our resident hillbilly genius, too. Like astrophysicist or whatever he's into these days.
George, and we won't say his last name, George is a fucking genius.
Yeah. Yeah. Writing books, but have you seen his latest thing? Like, he's disproving scientific theory now about magnetism or something. I mean, it's like way over my head. But
dude, fucking rock on, dude.
Yeah, dude. He's been doing videos. Like, he created this, like, motor.
Yep. Well,
magnets, yeah, that sort of defies some sort of scientific principle. I mean, I couldn't even say to do it justice, but
yeah, like usually, you know, you have copper windings, okay? So you have copper windings on a motor. And then you have magnets that revolve around said copper wire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm probably totally fucking this up, and he's laughing at us, but
I know, we'd have to go watch his YouTube video to, like, get it straight.
Hey, I am subscribed, by the way.
Oh, yeah, well.
Well, and maybe you should too, and like get on your fancy computer that you got 6 years ago and hardly know how to use. Yeah. So let's see. So I think Spook, his nickname was Spook. And how he got that was very similar to what? Do you remember what that movie was? There was like a teenage movie where this guy was dressed as a ghost and he wound up banging someone else's girlfriend because, well, that's what happened. And that's how Chris got the nickname Spook. It's not a derogatory.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
I wondered about that.
Yeah. That's what happened. He wound up, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right on. Yeah.
Right. And then Rock, I don't know what the hell happened to Rock, but you know, it's interesting. Did you know that George's child and my child were born on the same day?
You're kidding me.
Same year, same day.
Wow.
Right?
How does that happen?
Well, Jay, it's called a penis and a vagina, and you interact with them, and it's called sex, and then people have... Yeah.
You know, some people call each other up and, like, you know, figure out what they're gonna wear that day. You guys call each other
right
up, like, it was going down tonight.
George, I said it when I signed that guitar, I said, find the blues. Not match the ooze. George is a great guy. I love that guy.
We gotta get together with him, man. I'm telling you, for sure. It's gotta meet up somehow.
Yeah. And what's great is, okay, so I'm an atheist. And George isn't.
And I'm a Lutheran.
Yeah. And, you know, Jason's a knuckle dragger.
Knuckle dragger Lutheran.
So we'd like have these conversations. You know, it was never mean. It was always fun. You know, because we could just, you know, oh, okay, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're going to, that's okay. You can burn in hell. But we never took it personally because, it was just shit giving.
We love each other, man.
Yeah. So there is a script that, okay, well, I think it was like 2002?
Yeah, probably so. It was like early, yeah.
So we wrote this script about the people that we knew in college, but like turn it into a different type of a thing. And we would, like, I would write 8 pages and I'd email it to Jason. And then Jason would write 8 pages and he'd email it to George. And then George would write 8 pages. And I found it recently, and it is really funny.
Well, you know what? I need to look at that because, I mean, I sad to say, I my mind is deteriorating in my older years, and I don't really honestly remember the storyline, but I remember thinking, like, what a great way that was to write because it was like fluid, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the storyline just always kept taking another turn, you know, because
right. Well, we lived inside each other's pockets for a while, so we knew. You know, like we go, oh, here's a layup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here, we'll set this up. And, and we used to have, okay, do you have the cartoons? Because we used to do cartoons and shit. We used to do comics of our, like, life.
George,
in,
George drew them. It was strange Yankees in a strange land, and you and I were obviously his targets. And he did the greatest caricatures of us.
Dude, that was so funny. Oh, my God.
And I, you know what? And I mean, the greatest tragedy of my life is that in all my moving and divorces and stuff, I've lost them. I mean, they were my prized possession, and I like have begged him, you know, to like to see if he was even remotely interested in trying to like revisit that.
They're so funny.
So funny. Oh my God. Like the caricature of me with the glasses on the end of my nose and like these big arms, you know, muscular, like forearms dragging on the ground. And you know, you had like, I think he did you with like freckles and like long black curly hair.
That's great, man. Oh, totally.
And we were Yankee soldiers, remember? And then like he'd do a storyline where he was like the rebel soldier. And he would like send sheep into our camp, and then we were like doing invincible things with the sheep, and then they, you know, won the battle because we were distracted.
Right, but what was great is that we all worked different shifts, so the comic would be left on the fucking kitchen counter type of thing, and then we would respond.
Oh, it was great.
And we'd have the response comic about what, and then we just totally make fun of him because he was, you know, oh, I'm going to shout out motherfucker.
Yeah.
Dude, these comics were the, I wish, oh my They're God, hilarious. That would make a hilarious. Great show.
Yeah, we really, you know, I've tried, maybe but like if you
helped. We were broke as hell. We were broke as hell, but man, we had so much fun.
Oh, so much fun.
Oh my God.
Remember like our townhouse? Remember like, you know, you like, go down in the dark and like turn the kitchen light on and the counters were moving with cockroaches. I mean, it was like cockroach infested. Like it's not, I've never in my life seen that many cockroaches in one place. It was like a New York City, you know, sewer.
Right.
When you turn the light on, you know, but man, what good times. And we used to terrorize Sherry's cat.
Oh, hypothetically, there was a group of people that terrorized a young kitten.
That's right. Yeah. Allegedly.
Now, allegedly. So the people who lived in said townhome,
right?
The four out of the five were allergic to cats. Not that they didn't like them. They were fucking allergic to the kits.
Nothing ever befell.
Right. So, Scary Sherry had Scary Sherry had like a tabby or some bullshit, whatever the fuck you call it, if you're a fucking cat person. No offense, I'm just a dog guy because I'm allergic to cats.
And there was Boo. Boo was the little black one.
Yeah. So she doesn't even ask any of us. She's like, oh, hey, I got another fucking cat. We're like, what? I'm like, we're fucking allergic. Hello? Hello? Do we matter here, Queen of Vagina?
Hey,
you know,
hey, let me point this out, too. Not only were we allergic, but we were also, like, living on couches that we found on the side of the street.
Well, I had a fucking bed. I wasn't sleeping like an animal.
Well, George was. George, you remember that brown couch?
Well, George had a situation. It was, like, disgusting. Yeah. Well, George had a situation that, you know, the couch was welcome to him and, you know, right. Motor on, brother. But,
yeah.
So anyway, so we're all allergic to cats. Well, hypothetically, these three people were allergic to cats. So, what we did, when you're in college, you don't buy, you know, at that time, like, 2 liters were, like, a big thing. Because you can get, like, a 2 liter of soda for, like, 68 cents. Boom. So we'd empty all these sodas before we would go to beer time, and we'd have them lined up because the cat was an outside cat, and it would come in and out, you know, and we'd leave the sliding glass door open, and we're getting hammered, and we'd have bottles lined up, and dude, we're going to get so much hate for this. So hypothetically, these guys hypothetically, these gentlemen had all these empty plastic 2 liter bottles lined up. And then George would go, boo! And when the cat came in, it was like a fucking machine gun, like three drunk dudes fucking throwing like 16 fucking 2 liter empty bottles. That no, poor fucking cat.
In fairness, we never actually hit them, but, you know, no.
No, it was like, you know, watching like an action flick and you see the sparks behind like Sylvester Stallone. You know. Well, hey.
The stuff you do when you're bored and broke, you know.
Yeah. Next on Confession Time. Hypothetically. Did you work on that fucking Bermuda Triangle bullshit I had to do for like fucking 12 weeks? It was Bermuda Triangle. Yeah, it was like a fucking, it was the booze cruise, but it was 14 or whatever, 12 weeks of doing a music video, like a Friday night music video show from a fucking booze cruise.
I don't think I did that. I know I did some.
I think that was right before you. I think me. Right before I met you, we did that. I think Rob was on there for a few. Oh my god, dude! So we get the. So the deal is okay. We'll do the thing. We'll bring the equipment from the school. But the thing was, we could get paid. The school would allow us to get paid, but they had to provide the videotape.
Right.
And they didn't. So the first week we're there, we're all set up. Okay, where's the videotape? What?
Nothing.
Dude.
Not cool.
You know, I'm like, okay, rookie move on a lot of people's parts here, you know, but yeah, it was something. But
yeah, I did some corporate things with you guys. I would like do sound for, like, you know, you guys were shooting commercials, like dentist offices and things like that, local TV stuff. I remember doing some of that with you.
Yeah. Did you work on the one where the big action scene with the police car?
Don't think I did that, but I did do the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival with you.
Dude, that was great. I did. I wound up working with the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival for like 5 years in L.A.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, because they would do stuff over there. Hey, we're doing this blockbuster party for fucking. I'm like, yeah, hell yeah. You know, boom.
Yeah,
and
that's when I had to follow Darren McGavin around with a camera one day.
Yeah. Yeah, and Bobcat Goldthwait was there as well.
Yeah.
Yep, and that's when I had to babysit Burt Reynolds for like 3 days.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. That was the greatest fucking thing ever. Burt Reynolds punched me like 5 times.
Really?
Not like, you know, in the arm, like Charlie Horse. Like I'd say something and he'd laugh and he'd punch me. I'm like,
yeah, how many people can say that? I'm like, he's a legend, man. You got beat by a legend.
Burt Reynolds just fucking punched me because he thought my joke was funny. That's fucking fantastic. Gold.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Dude, Smokey and the Bandit?
Oh.
Are you kidding me?
My kids are like,
my name is Justice.
Or Buford T. Justice.
Buford P. Justice.
Give me an El Diablo sandwich and a Dr. Pepper to go. I'm in hot pursuit.
Dude, that was great. Eastbound and down, loading up, I'm trucking.
Jerry Reed, man. What a monster guitar player. Yeah.
Do you know he wrote that song overnight?
Oh, I bet. I bet he was a genius.
Yeah. What's his name? The stunt guy was fucking directing the movie. He's like, hey, I got this idea I came with overnight. And he's like, what? Because he did something, they didn't like it or something maybe, and then he came back the next morning and boom, Eastbound and Down.
Oh, yeah. All right. Classic. Yeah, Jerry Reed, I mean, for anybody that doesn't know his history, I mean, that guy was a monster player. You know, had his claw technique. I mean,
Well, a lot of those guys. Glenn Campbell.
Yeah. Oh, Glenn Campbell, monster. Yeah, he was part of the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, people have no fucking idea, you know. Yeah. Dude, the Wrecking Crew, wow.
Yeah, what's there to say about them? I mean, they're just, you know, all the Beach Boys tunes. Everybody thought the Beach Boys played them. No, it was like, you know, Carol Kay and the Wrecking Crew doing that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Carol Kay, you know, one of the first women, you know, bass player, multi-instrumentalist. I mean, she played, but, you know, she's most known for the bass line and Good Vibrations, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just genius players.
Oh, she's a badass.
You know, Tommy Tedesco, I mean, you know, those guys, I mean, they were, you know, of course, Glenn Campbell, you know. Before he had his famous country solo career, but, you know, he was part of that early on.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, he was in the Beach Boys for a little bit and people kind of knew him from that. And then he went into, you know, did his whole thing, you know, with the, what was the, what was the line, the lineman?
Wichita Lineman?
Yeah.
Great, great song. He had great songs, man. Wichita Lineman, you know, Rhinestone Cowboy was his.
Like a Rhinestone Cowboy.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you, too, another monster, Johnny A., you know, he does a great instrumental version of Wichita Lineman for anybody that's not familiar with his playing, but he's fabulous.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of those guys were, you know, I'm not much of a country fan because country now is just top 40 with the twang.
Yeah, it's just pop.
Yeah.
I can't listen to the new stuff. But
you know, I like ugly country.
Yeah, I love the outlaw stuff, you know, from the 70s, 80s. And, I mean, I kind of like some of it, like up to about 2000. But after 2000, I mean, it really went, you know, kind of just my opinion, you know.
Yeah. There's another guy that I really dig, and he was an engineer. He did a bunch of shit for the Seattle scene, and that's Seasick Steve.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dude, that guy is great.
I didn't realize he was an engineer, but he's got some great tunes.
Oh, yeah, dude. He worked with, like, Pearl Jam and fucking... Yeah,
oh,
dude.
I didn't realize.
Oh, so, dude, yeah. He was, like, in the mix. Yeah, he was that guy.
Yeah.
And then he become, you know, he fucking moved to Europe and become famous at fucking 63 years old, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Right on, dude.
Yeah, totally.
You know, but Johnny Cash, of course.
Oh, man, monster. Willie
Nelson.
Yep. Waylon.
Christopherson. Now, Christopherson, I saw him do something last year and I was like, dude.
Great, great songwriter.
But dude, who let him on the stage? You know, it was like, there comes a time.
Yeah.
And the time had passed. You know what I mean? Just for his own security of what, you know what I mean? It just, you know, it was, you know what I mean? There's a time to leave the party and there's a time.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes you got to surrender your driver's license, right? And same kind of thing.
Well,
you know?
Yeah. I've never experienced that, but yeah. Sure.
But monster. Sure. I mean, just monster songwriter. So many hits he wrote in the 70s and 80s. Then they had the Highwaymen, remember? It was
Chris
Christopherson, Johnny Cash.
Absolutely.
Willie Waylon. I mean, yeah. Great album.
Waylon Jennings, another monster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure he's glad he didn't get on that plane, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a crazy story, isn't it? When he was, like, playing with Buddy Holly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a lot of survivor's guilt for years about that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cocaine.
Oh, yeah. He was all those guys, man. The pills. Uh-huh. And, you know, people realize that the Nashville crew back in the 70s, I mean, they put the Rolling Stones to shame, right? You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was crazy. I read Waylon's autobiography. It's definitely a good read. But it's amazing he lived as long as he did, you know.
So
I was lucky enough. I got to see him, actually, when I was a kid. I saw him play, and it was probably 83, something like that. 83, 84.
I got to see Loretta.
Ooh, yeah.
First row.
Nice.
At the, what do you call it? The Grand Ole Opry.
Mm. Okay.
And she winked at me.
She did.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was 8 years old, and I was like, right on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay. I dig what she's doing.
Daughter.
Yep. I dig what she's doing. I'm like, right on. She's always cool.
That's when it all began for you.
Yeah. And I worked on Johnny Cash American. That was cool.
You did?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
So I had worked, like, it was like something, it was over 30 days. It was something close to 40 days in a row. I don't know. I may be embellishing.
Is that the one that he did with Rick Rubin?
Yeah.
Oh, right on. That's
so I'm like, I'm baked. I'm like, dude, I've just worked.
No,
I'm just worked.
You
know, I get this fucking text. I'm like, not text. I was beeped. at that time.
Right, we had beepers in the day. Yeah.
So the beeper goes off. You know, I'm like, oh, it's not the drug dealer. Fuck. And I'm like, okay, damn it. He wants something. I'm like, it's like, this is the guy that like called me like 5 times in a row, do me a favor. And it was always like a bullshit job. But he appreciated it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, legitimately. He's like, dude, I'm in a spot. I'll pay you. I'll bump your pay. I'm like, right on. Well, whatever you need. And of course, when I got there, I made someone else do what I was supposed to do, and I did something else.
Yeah.
So I get this phone call. He's like, hey. I'm like, dude. I call him like, man. I said, I've just worked like fucking whatever how many days in a row. I need a break. He's like, you know how you wanted to get into the camera department? I'm like, yes. And, you know, okay. And I goes, well, it's black and white. I'm like, ooh, even better.
Right.
And he's like, it's Johnny Cash. And I'm like, what? He goes, not only is it Johnny Cash, it's only Johnny Cash by himself, no band, first time in 28 years, and he's doing stuff that he hasn't done since the Sun Sessions. And I'm like, what? I'm like, dude, you don't even have to fucking pay me. He goes, no, I'm going to pay you. But it was like a 5-man crew, right? So it's at the Viper Room, and it's, I talked about this before, but it's at the Viper Room, and it's the first show after River Phoenix passed away from an overdose outside. And I'm like, okay. And there's all these flowers and shit, da da da. So I'm like getting like 4 Johnny Cash American videos over the time, but. You know, he's totally cool. He comes in and I light him. So my lighting is on the back of the cover. Little fucking trivia question. So, yeah. And so everyone's like, you know, no one talked to Johnny. No one talked to Johnny. Don't talk to Johnny. Don't talk to Johnny. I'm like, all right, yeah. And he cuts through everyone, pushes Rick Rubin aside, and he goes, hey, Vince, I'm a little nervous. Do you mind having a beer with me? And I'm like, fuck yeah. And they're all like waving me on like, yes. I'm like, duh. I'm like, I'd get fired right now.
Yeah.
To have a beer. I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean?
Was that the Sessions? Was that the album where he did Hurt, the Nine Inch Nails tune?
No, I think that was like American 4.
Oh, okay.
I was on American.
That is a masterpiece.
But they used the same footage from the show from the Viper Room, the black and white stuff from American, you know, 1, you would call it.
Yeah, right on.
You know, so I'm in there a few times. You can see me young, youthful, and, you know, with flowing hair.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What did Fat Bastard say in Austin Powers? Like, right, sexy or something.
Get in my belly! Shit. Uh-huh.
Yeah, right. Remember I ran into you in Newport Beach in California when I was out there on that photo shoot when I was working for...
Dude, that was awesome.
Yeah, dude.
Dude,
I remember calling you. You were living in West L.A. at the time, just after the hurricane in Northridge, right?
Well, West L.A. is further... I was in Northridge... during the earthquake, the Northridge earthquake, and then I moved to West LA.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that was after. Yeah, I remember we were out there, you know, we were doing all this these annual reports. You know, the friend of mine, he moved up from Manhattan, you know, upstate to my little hometown, Roscoe, up there, and I met him, and we were playing a band again. He was playing bass.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roscoe.
Oh, hey, Jason?
Yeah. I love that sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, so he was like the leader in his field. You know, he had been like a top corporate photographer for like 20 years, you know. You know, had, you know, Saudis like putting him on their private 747 to fly him to Bahrain to do shoots and stuff. And so, you know, we started playing a band together and, you know, he's like, I need an assistant, you know, somebody to carry cases, set up lights. And I was like, yeah, I'm down. So we would just fly all over the country. And, you know, at one point I went to Paris as well. We were working for a French insurance company called AXA and the Equitable. And the CEO didn't want to come to New York to do the shoot, so they flew us to Paris, you know.
Don't you hate when that happens?
Yeah, it was rough.
We got to go to France.
Stay in a block off the Champs-Élysées, you know, I got to go hang out. And check.
Who's
the
lesbian?
Got to see the Mona Lisa in person and, you know, all that good stuff.
That's what she said.
She was hot.
Right.
She was definitely hot, yeah.
And the Mona Lisa is not that big of a painting.
No, it's tiny, man. I mean, that's the craziest thing about it. It's small. It's about like 12 inches tall, you know.
Right, but it's what you're exposed to and what people tell you what it is, and people are like, oh, really? You would think it was like a 3-foot by 5-foot painting.
Oh, yeah. No, it's really small, small.
You know.
But those were cool days, too. You know, I mean, we just, like, I was on a plane a couple times a day. You know, we'd fly from New York to, you know, California, do a shoot, and fly up to Oregon, you know, Washington State, and then down to Texas, and
totally,
you know, like bounce around the country, and, you know, be home on a Friday, you know.
Yep.
But I remember we were out there, and we had hotel reservations somewhere, and he saw the car service came and pick us up from the airport, and we saw the Four Seasons Hotel, and he's like, "Oh, we're staying there." Called GameStar Arrangements. I remember calling you, and I said, "Look, dude, haven't seen you in years. I'm in California. This might be your only chance to see me." I remember you came down. We were
fuck yeah, dude.
I think we were drinking Bud Lights at $8 a can back in the day, you know.
Yeah, and it was rare for me to have a day off anywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome, man.
You know, I'll just look up on my map. Not an app, but an actual paper map.
Right, back in the old days, sir.
Mm-hmm. What is that? Oh, that's a way of navigating.
I'll tell you the truth, man. That's the last time we've actually, like, hung out together, I believe. That's been, what was that, probably 95, I think?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, we've kept in touch, of course, but, you know, it's, you know, in person.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So, with this project, you know, the hopes is to get you out here for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, come out, record a few tunes here in person. Rhythm section, whatever, boom, do this, do that, you know, hang out and, you know, but, you know, I'm working on sponsorships and, you know, stuff like that to make that, you know, happen.
Well,
as well as to pay for other
vacation time, so maybe we can work it out. I mean, I kind of, the idea of coming to Chicago in like January, February doesn't really,
right?
Doesn't fire me up, but hey, I'll
right? Be, you know. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's cold as hell, bro.
I guess, you know, maybe that's something I should experience once in my life, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, it might spark growth on your scalp.
Hey, maybe. You know, I tell you, I've been bald for so long now that I don't think I want hair anymore. I've really turned the corner.
Dude, I love shaving my head. Here's the thing. If I could, like, clone my hair and I could get back the hair that I had,
yeah,
I'd grow it out again. But other than that, I don't give a fuck.
I'll be honest with you. I want to stay the same. I want to stay bald. I like bald now.
People, you know, still don't ask me for the time, whether it's long hair or fucking shaved head. So right. It's the same kind of attitude. So it doesn't really bother me, you know.
I always get that. You look so mean and unapproachable all the time. I'm like, I don't.
Well,
know.
Yeah, because that's because you should fuck off.
No, right. Because I don't want you to approach me.
Right. Oh, that's because I just shit my pants, but, what?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's best served cold.
Right. That's what she said.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know. So okay, so let's talk about, you had, at one time, you were moving rock, and you were across the bay. From the Twin Towers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was, I'd gone back to New York. I thought I was in love. My first wife, right? You know, I got married. And, when that subsequently ended, then, you know, I had a cousin that got me this great union job, you know? So I was commuting 2 hours to work each way. From upstate New York to Rockland County, New York. I was working in the rock quarry. I was running really giant earth moving equipment. I was running a Caterpillar 992 wheel loader, which is, you know, you can Google it. It's enormous. But we used to be able to, on a clear day, we could see the towers, you know, from the pit where I was digging. And I was working night shift at that time, you know, so I, you know, 10, 2 hours home, and you know, I got home in the wee hours and went to bed. And, you know, I was thinking about this morning, actually, you know, that it's kind of surreal that it's been 20 years already, you know, and how time flies. It doesn't seem like it. Right. But I remember, you know, I was finally sound asleep in my apartment, and phone rang, and it was my mom, and said, you know, go turn the TV on. And I saw, you know, what was going on with the first plane had gone in, and I was all groggy, you know. I just woke up, and I was just at that point thinking it was maybe an air traffic control mistake or something. I wasn't really realizing what was happening, you know. And then 2 minutes later, when the second plane went in, I was like, uh-oh, you know, this ain't cool.
Right.
So I went into work that night, and you know, I think I started my shift probably started 2-3 in the afternoon, something like that. And I could, of course, see the smoke. You know, you could see all the dust and the smoke and stuff rising. And it was creepy. You know, there was they had set up a no fly zone. I remember I was working, I was in the loader doing my thing, and I saw a little Cessna plane come across the sky, and it was like a few minutes later, two F-16s like came from out of nowhere and got into the plane and kind of directed him where he should go.
Yeah, not here, motherfucker.
Right. But, you know, then subsequently the plant superintendent called me, and he said, I've got you on the list to go down there to clean up. He said, we're taking equipment down there. Wasn't really like excited about it, but I thought, you know, well, let me do this. You know, I mean, I'll do what I got to do, what anybody needs me to do. And, you know, some of my friends, my coworkers, you know, they,
well, it was stepping up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, exactly. You didn't want to do it, but you had to do it because this is your fucking, dude, this is your fucking shit, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So we rolled our, you know, a lot of our loaders and dump trucks and things down there. And then some of my friends, you know, that they went on the first round down there. And I was supposed to go the second round, you know, relieve those guys. And I don't remember the details. Something happened in the, you know, the head of our company, you know, he pulled our equipment out. There was some sort of snafu or something with the guy that was, you know, had the heavy equipment that you saw on TV in those days. I don't really remember the details now, but he pulled our stuff out of there, and I didn't end up going down, you know, but some of my coworkers had, and it was not good. You know, it was a rough time for sure.
You know, what really amazes me, I was talking about this earlier today, and people look at me cross-eyed. I'm like, but no, it's, think about it. Okay, so at the time that it happened, most of the photography was traditional film. There was, now,
that's true.
Digital was coming up.
It was not a thing yet. Yeah.
Digital was coming up, but
it wasn't, the quality wasn't there yet.
Right. So you had, what people don't understand, how many professional photographers live
in Manhattan.
In Manhattan.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, they all rushed out to document.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm not doing this to be grim. I'm not doing this to be you know, like a yellow type of journalism, so to speak, but the fact that we never saw an arm, a toe, a face, to me, that's a massive intelligence operation.
Absolutely, because I will tell you what I just told you about my friends being down there,
yeah,
working there. there was a lot of that. That was the hardest part, they said, was, you know, the initial clearing of things had to be done before the sorting out of debris and parts that were in the debris.
Correct. You
know? Yeah.
So to me, that is, people don't understand how much of a massive operation that was.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, for not one image. You know, pictures of, you know, what's her name, Princess Diana in their fucking car, fucking bleeding, you know. Mm-hmm. Dude, there's imagery of everything. Right. And the fact that not one photo escaped, and yeah, they showed people falling to their deaths to a point.
On video, yeah.
Right. Yeah. But the fact that is a glaring omission in the historic record.
And very tasteful, thank God, right?
Correct. I mean, you know. Absolutely.
Would that happen that today? I'm not so sure.
Well, it depends who's in office, I'm sure.
Right.
You know, yeah. But to me, the fact that not one image was out there, you know.
I mean, you make a good point. I never thought of that, but you're absolutely right.
It's massive. People don't understand, you know, how many people were. Yeah. Well, that means they had to go door to door. They knew who the photographers were.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 you know.
Yeah. And somebody was being a gatekeeper there. You know, somebody was, I mean, there may have been images, and they were like, probably like said, okay, we can't do this one, you know. We can't,
right,
you know?
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Respectfully, of course.
Right. And thank but God to they had the class.
Yeah.
To do that.
But know? It just amazes me. You know, working in the media, it just amazes me that not one image, it's so dumbfounding to me that not one image slipped through.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I actually never really thought about that until you just said it, but yeah, you're right. I mean, that's, and kudos to those guys, whoever they
absolutely.
Were.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. absolutely. You know, yeah. but it's just a weird thing.
Yeah,
totally. You know, I'm not looking to see these images.
And no, I mean, come on, everybody, we really, I mean, you can infer the grotesqueness of what happened, you know, but we don't need to see it, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, kudos to the guys that did that.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you make a great point I never thought of, but.
We're 3 minutes away from, well, on the East Coast, we're 3 minutes away from it hitting midnight. And hopefully in the next 3 minutes, there'll be no 20th anniversary surprise.
Exactly.
You know, but unfortunately, a lot of men and women had to go into war. And
yeah, we lost a lot.
Yeah, after the people that we were supposed to get were taken out, supposedly, mm-hmm. We stayed longer than I think we should have. There was never going to be an easy way out of it.
Right.
But, you know, it seems a lot of, you know, veterans, rightfully so, are upset at the situation. And they should be.
Yeah, because, you know, this mess that we have now, I mean, it's just going to embolden and it's going to rebuild, basically.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter who was in office. Mickey Mouse could be in office and it would be a fucking shit show. It has nothing to do with the dude, you know, holding the seat.
I feel for the guys that were over there, all the work they did, all the things they went through, and now it's it seems all for naught in a way. You know what I mean?
Well, right. Well, I mean, you know, they took down the USSR. Why would we beat them?
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? It was another nom. You know, people. That's why I was always kick the can, kick the can, kick the can.
Yep, on down the road.
But, you know. Okay, so you play guitar and you play bass.
Yeah.
Which do you like playing better?
Boy, I'll tell you what, man. That's one of those, it depends on the day, you know. I mean, there's some days that, I'll tell you the truth about, probably a couple of years ago, I put guitar down and I played nothing but bass for like probably 2 or 3 years. And then, you know, with my gear addiction that I'm constantly fighting, I amassed quite a collection of really nice basses. That sadly I've sold all, but I have the only one I have left is a first year Giddy Lee signature jazz bass.
Nice.
I kept that one.
Do you slap it?
Oh yeah, I try to slap it. I'm not
slapping the bass, man.
Not so good at slapping the bass, but
slapping the bass.
I'll tell you the stuff that really gives me a charge. I love good like 60s esque Motown, you know, soul kind of just like strong bassline stuff, just groove stuff, you know.
Yep.
So I can really,
dude. People forgot about the groove, and that was such a mistake.
Oh, yeah, man, it's where it's at.
If the girls, everything. If the girls ain't dancing,
yeah.
What's the point?
And even people that don't realize it, as human beings, that's the first thing we respond to.
Right. And when I say that, if the girls ain't dancing, that's not like, oh my God, it's a massage. No, it's not a misogynist. Fuck.
No. Totally
if the not. Girls ain't dancing, the guys ain't dancing.
Yeah.
You know.
So I still, I'll tell you the truth. Actually, you know, with us, you know, I was messing around with. You know, the things that we've been working on, and I pulled the bass out the other day. I laid down a little drum track, and I started, you know, just doing like a little bass groove. And I thought, oh yeah,
right on.
Now I remember, I need to do more of this too.
Well, there's a hidden special weapon for some groovy ass drum beats by his name. His name's Mike, and I looked up to him since I was a little kid, and this guy can bring it in several ways, and so there's two or three songs from what we're doing that he'll probably be setting behind the kit for.
Right on.
Dude, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. I mean, you were talking about you knew some female background vocalists and things as well. I mean, so.
Oh yeah, well, we're gonna pull everybody in.
That's where it's at.
You know, I saw you had a sampler, right?
No, I got a MIDI keyboard. But I mean, I guess I could basically.
Well, can you play the keyboard?
Such, I know a few chords and this and that, but yeah, you know, maybe just for a little flavor. I wouldn't really call myself a keyboard player, but now my ex-wife, who I still get along with well, mother of my children, she is a great pianist and plays violin as well.
Oh, cool.
And my son actually is just a natural with piano, and I put him in some lessons, but sadly, I guess they shouldn't be sad about it. Now he's got on a brass kick. He's into trumpet now. He's been doing trumpet and
trumpet
stuff. So
see, I like brass. Really, and my really, oldest son tinkers with sax and he plays clarinet.
Yeah.
And I have access to a sax player, but nice. Honky tonk piano is what I'm looking for, baby.
Oh man, I'll tell you, I wish I knew how to do it. There's nothing like it, you know. I was hoping he would like stay hardcore with it, you know, and like get it, you know. I'd get him like a, Hammond B3 or a C3 with like a Leslie 122 speaker. I mean, that great old, you know,
nice
blues and Motown, you know, stuff. I mean, you can't beat that.
Absolutely.
He might come back to it. He's 14, so he's all over the place right now, you know. But.
Right. Well, it sounds like he's immersed in music. Either way.
Yeah, between the two of us, you know, she plays around the house. I just bought them ukuleles, him and my daughter, and they're doing ukulele lessons now. And you know, like I said, he's done piano lessons. Hopefully, he'll get some more. But he's into the trumpet right now, doing the brass thing. So, but
nice.
A lot of music around. You know, I mean, like when they're you know with me, I mean, a lot of classic rock, metal stuff like that. Their mother, she's into a lot of bluegrass and Americana type stuff. So they're getting like a wide variety of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So that's very cool.
Right on. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, she sings as well. I mean, like when, years ago when I when I first met her, she was a basically a barbershop quartet thing, like a competing barbershop quartet vocal group.
Nice. My dad was in one as well.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, so she's got that down, you know. And she's offered to, you know, I mean, she always loves to do stuff. So if, you know, we need to put some...
Something or whatever. There's a few tunes that need harmonica, but violin. There's a couple tunes that need violin.
Yeah, right on. Yeah,
she could. Sure. Absolutely. Right on. So.
But yeah, so these days I'm playing mostly guitar though. But you know, these projects that we're talking about, pretty cool that, you know, I actually, you know, picked the bass up again too. It kind of stoked me up a little bit too, you know, just to, you know, nothing like a good moving bass line.
Yeah, I got sucked in a couple years ago. I hadn't been in front of an audience in 20 years.
Oh yeah, it's been probably more than that for me.
And then someone's like, hey, why don't you come on up, blah, blah, blah. So I went up there, and it wasn't that big of a deal, but it was still like, oh, I wound up doing like 4 or 5 tunes, and,
nice.
You know, had a nice response, and then, you know, dude, I fucking hate karaoke. And someone like, you know, like everyone was up there, I did a couple things, got a nice response, and then I went home.
Mm-hmm. Was it karaoke that you were doing, or was it?
Yeah, I did one of Dead or Alive, right? So I go home right after that, and I almost die of one of the first people to have COVID because my blood vessel. I even apologize to people beforehand. I'm like, I may not hit all the notes. I'm not feeling well.
Yeah.
Went home, blah, blah, blah. Almost bled to death. The blood vessel in the back of my sinus cavity ruptured. From the side effects of what was going on, blah, blah, blah. The kids came to say goodbye, all that whole thing.
Really? Blah, blah. Was that bad?
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah.
Oh, dude, I didn't know.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
Thanks for you know, cluing me in on that one.
Well, everyone was like, oh, it was a bloody nose. I'm like, well, it was more. But if I would have said more at the time, no one would have believed me.
Right.
Well, that was when it was Corona. But, yeah, anyway.
Oh.
You know, what are you going to do? So, yeah.
So you think you had it?
Oh, I know I had it.
You did?
For sure.
It's
funny. It took me like
that,
4 months to recover from it.
Not to interrupt you, but my mom, before we really knew about it, she got really sick at one point. She's a small woman anyway. But she ended up with pneumonia in one lung. We kept taking her to the doctors, and they would prescribe whatever, and nothing would work.
Mm-hmm.
Take her back, nothing would work, she wasn't getting any better. Then it got into both lungs, and then I thought we were going to lose her. She was so sick.
Yeah.
Weak. One morning, we heard a thud upstairs and went up there, and she'd fallen out of bed. She had tried to, you know, go to the restroom and it just collapsed. And she had gotten down to 94 pounds. And we took her yet again back to the emergency room, and I was like getting really pissed because I was like, I said to the doctors, I'm like, you guys have been treating pneumonia for how many years now? Why is this is nothing working? You know, tell me what's going on here, you know? And, you know, they did, you know, then they were wondering about lung cancer and this and that, did all the MRIs and things, and it's, you know, nothing. And she slowly pulled out of it, but it was scary and it took forever. And you know, and then in hindsight, I look back and I go, I wonder if she was one of the first cases, you know, before it was really a thing, you know,
right.
Cause she was a waitress at the time, you know, she's since then she was so sick. I mean, she's had to retire and then she doesn't work now. And things, but I look back and I go, you know, I don't have proof, but I'm sort of leaning towards the fact that maybe, you know, one of her customers, you know, maybe they were on an international flight. Who knows? Maybe she was one of the first, at least around here, you know, cases of it, you know, because it was just freaking me out. Cause I'm like, you know, I mean, they kept prescribing this, that, and the other, but nothing was touching it, you know? Mm-hmm. So
now in college,
yeah,
I used to make you feel very uncomfortable. every time we talked about your mom.
You did. Well, you have to refresh my memory, like I said.
I'd be like, hey, Jason, your mom sounds really sexy, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing
and
is my mom.
To be fair, your mom is like one of the coolest people I've ever talked to ever.
Totally.
She's,
but you know, to be fair too, she looks young for her age. I mean, like, you know, back then, I mean, like when she was like in her.
Yeah, no, she's a good looking woman.
She's in her
30s, and I would just, I knew it bugged you, and it wasn't like ill. Nothing was ever ill. Ill-fated or anything. Yes, I just did it because I knew it bugged you. But yeah. No, your mom, I love your mom, man. She's awesome.
Yeah, she's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I live with her now, man. Uh-huh.
Because she'd call, let me talk to Vince. Oh, yeah, okay. Here you go, Vince.
I told her I was going to be talking to you. And she's always trying to keep up with what everybody's doing and that stuff.
Yeah, no, she's awesome. She's always been awesome. She's awesome. Absolutely, man.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think we've done so far the longest creativity podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I can talk, man. A couple of cold ones I can talk
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. I can, yeah. You know, I can go on forever as long as I keep forgetting what the fuck I'm talking about.
Right.
But absolutely, man. Okay, so what other, what other bands and... you know, types of genres of music that you work in after, you know, Lauderdale?
Well, I mean, like, while I was down there, we did, of course, Whitney Houston, the song I Will Always Love You for the Bodyguard. That was, like, a real big deal at the time.
Oh, I Will Always Love You? Yeah, just a minor song.
Yeah, it was just a blip on the charts back then.
Nothing special.
Yeah, I think I was 19 when we did that. We went down to Miami to the Fontainebleau Hotel. And they were actually filming the movie. You know, Kevin Costner was there, met him as well. And when you see her singing the song in the movie, I'm standing about 12 feet to her left. And she actually, we were...
Oh, you're the dude masturbating?
What's that?
You're the dude masturbating?
Yeah. Yeah, that was me.
I'm joking.
She actually, I mean, you know, we were rolling tape, and when you see her singing in the movie, she was putting it down. There was no lip syncing involved, which was very cool. And that was the big one. I mean, we did, we used to do pretty much all of Gloria Estefan's live stuff.
Yeah, I remember that.
Peter Yamalos was good friends with Eric Schilling, who was the chief engineer at Crescent Moon, you know, Gloria's studio in Miami. They went way back, so we did. Like,
yeah, and for people who don't know, the Estevans in the music business in Florida are fucking major.
Yeah, and you know what? For people that don't know, they're the sweetest, nicest people, the celebrities you'll ever meet. So down to earth.
Absolutely.
I mean, she was great. You know, I've done multiple things with her. I did the Hurricane Relief Show at Joe Robbie Stadium after Hurricane Andrew. We did a VH1 center stage special with her. With the New World Symphony Orchestra, I believe it was. And yeah, lots of stuff. I mean, really, really sweet people and just down to earth. But did a bunch of things with her. We did, I'm trying to think, we did a lot of stuff for, like, you know, NBC Sports, did the Orange Bowl Parade and Carnival, did a lot of Univision things, as you remember, that was big down there. I'm trying to think. I did Black Sabbath. We did B-sides for European release in 91 in Tampa.
And who was singing?
It was Ronnie James Dio. That was on the Dehumanizer
tour. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I met him, hung out with him. Great. What a sweet guy, too, you know.
Did Wayne's World bring them together, or were they already together before that?
I think they were together. Yeah, we went over and did that. It was good stuff. Danzig opened up.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else.
Dude, I used to run into Glenn Danzig all the time at the fucking Burger King on Highland Avenue in Hollywood.
Yeah, he's not really that. He's not really warm and fuzzy, is he?
At the same Burger King, I almost ran over Ricky Rockman 3 days in a row. Same time of day. going through the drive-thru because it was an easy grab because I'm running around doing a bunch of shit, you know. And it became like a bit, you know. And he was like, laugh. And it's like, you again? I'm like, eh, you know. And then I would run into Lily Tomlin every morning getting cigarettes.
Oh, that's awesome.
She was getting smokes. I was getting smokes. So it became like a running joke. Lily, Vince, you know, like, and that was it, you know, because I didn't want anything from her. She's, you know, she's fucking Lily Tomlin. She already gave me everything I needed, you know.
Yeah, she was fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know.
But yeah, those were the big ones. I'm sure I'm forgetting stuff. You know, and then there was just that I ran into people in my, you know, just in personal life. You know, I tell you the truth, when I was at LAX, the time that I saw you, I bumped into Brian Setzer in the airport, you know. And,
you dick!
Yeah.
Dude, Tony, I love Brian Setzer.
I rode a plane with him, you know, Peter Gabriel's bass player one time. Super guy. Yeah, you know, Tyra Banks, the old supermodel, you know.
Dude, I've got a funny story for you. So we're doing Mick Fleetwood's Halloween party at SIR Studios on Sunset, right?
Oh, right on.
Yeah, fucking great. For some reason, I wound up working with everyone in Fleetwood Mac. It was the weirdest.
Really?
Yeah, because I got it. Okay.
Worst troubles to have.
Right. Bro, well, what happened was I wound up doing this short film for free because it was the first time director. It was the first time Mark Ruffalo was in a film. His best friend, who was a paraplegic, was playing the lead. And the executive producer of this was Elton John and Fleetwood Mac's manager.
Wow.
So I wound up, for some in strange luck, just working with Fleetwood Mac like a bunch of times.
That's awesome.
Individually, together, separate, whatever they're doing. It was fucking weird. But, awesome. Yeah. So, so we're at Mick Fleetwood's, and I'm like, it's Halloween, so I got my leather pants on, I got this fucking cape, and I'm going as a fucking stage fan.
Yeah.
Like, I have the fan, the front of the fan, as a mask. Like, you know, it's a fucking Vornado fucking fan. And so, whatever. So we're up at the top of the house, and we're doing a bunch of stuff. We're orchestrating things, smoke, blah, blah, blah. These things that fly around, all this other shit.
Mm-hmm.
And someone from management comes by and drops a fucking bag.
Mm.
So,
pray tell, what was in the bag?
I don't know. I whited out. I whited out completely.
Right.
And I'm also, at this point, fucking hammered. Right? Because it's fucking, okay, so like, you know, because my part of the show was done.
Right.
And they encouraged everyone to have a great time.
Yeah, it was happy hour at that point, yeah.
In a certain kind of way. Right. You know, so it's like, okay, it was just known. Right? So I know that I'm out of control at this point. And this is like, you know, 1:30 in the morning. It's time for me to go. My gig is done, and I'm trying to make it out of the facility at SIR. So I'm cruising, and I'm like, and I'm going to fucking puke. Like, I'm like not in good shape. Right. And I was really embarrassed because, you know me, when I'm doing a gig, I don't fuck around. Yeah. And so this was like, I was like, what the fuck am I doing?
Like, you dropped your guard.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I'm a dick. So anyway, so like, I'm like trying to, yeah, so I'm like trying to cruise out. And there's this fucking dude who's on the Howard Stern show. Whatever the fuck he is, I don't know. He's like some fucking annoying fuck. I'm waiting for my fucking taxi, right?
Who was it? Was it like Stuttering John?
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't part of the staff. It was one of the people who would come in.
Oh, okay.
Like an external guy. And he was a skinny fucking, you know, whatever. And I'm fucking hammered and I don't want to deal with it. And I'm like, fuck, he's coming up to me. I don't want to be on the Stern show fucking being wasted. Right? So I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm like, I've got 20 feet left. to get the fuck out of this enclosed space that's decorated with spider webs and smoke machines and all types of shit.
Right.
And I hear my smoke machine go, dude, I stop and I look at it and I fucking puke all over it.
Oh.
I turn around. Guess who's behind me? Mick fucking Fleetwood shaking his head. I'm like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
You ralphed in front of Mick Fleetwood.
And then like 2 years later, he's coming into the software company that I'm a producer at, right? So he comes in there and we're talking about doing like, you know how the thing that he does where he taps his body and he's got all these drum sounds going?
Yeah.
We had figured something out to do with the keyboard. So yeah, even if you didn't play drums, you could just fuck around and play drums hitting different keys.
Yeah.
And he looked at me.
He's like, you're that guy.
You know, like, and kind of like shook his head but didn't say anything. You know what I mean? Dude, it was the funniest fucking thing ever. But yeah,
he's
I worked
like, hey,
with Stevie
Ralph,
Nicks. And,
how you been, man?
Oh, my God. That was like the most embarrassing. I'm like,
you got to love it, though, man.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do?
People say they ralphed in front of Mick Fleetwood, though. Probably
right?
Just you.
At his own fucking party on Halloween.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you were in the crowd.
Okay,
man.
Not only that, but I was in a motherfucking cape. You know what I mean?
Like,
I was fucking. I had my
like
whore boot,
Zorro
dude. I had that. The fucking 80s whore boots on. I had the fucking leather pants, and I had the fucking cape.
Right.
I was not, you know, yeah. I full
did
on.
You,
fuck
did you have your black goatee at the time?
Did I? No, because I couldn't grow it.
Oh, you couldn't. Okay, yeah. I was gonna say you were like C6 Zorro, man.
Yeah. Hey, anytime Zorro's in the picture, I'm good to go.
Right.
Oh my God, that was so funny though. Holy shit. Oh, mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, I mean, just, what are we talking, like 25 years now, 28 years?
Something like that.
Yeah, man, time moves on, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and yeah, we definitely got to see each other in person this year. I think that would
definitely
be a good thing.
Well, you know, like I said, after January, I got some time, you know, we'll try to work it out.
Because as everyone knows, there's a handful of people you meet in your life, and it doesn't matter how long you fucking see them for, how long you don't talk. We talk all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, after my brother died, man, you checked in on me regularly, and I can't say enough about that.
Well, I've been there. I've been through that, too, with my buddy Boog, and I've probably had about, I think, four friends that have ended their life, so I definitely know.
Well, yeah, man.
It
was totally a solid brother thing, and you always know who your friends are when fucking darkness comes at the door, you know.
Yep, totally.
And the people who disappear, you don't. Well,
yeah,
whatever.
That's how they just weed themselves out, man. You know.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And on that note, Jason. Next time you come on, I think we're going to talk about guitar players.
Yeah, let's do that, man, because that's a subject that's near my heart, you know?
Absolutely. And we'll do, like, what do you want to do? You want to do metal or you want to do classic? What do you want to do?
Let's do it all, man. There's so many good ones from all genres, you know? We can just cover it all, I think, you know?
Absolutely.
Totally.
And everybody, it is National Suicide Prevention Week, and if you are in crisis, please call 1-800-273-8255 or text TALK to 741-741.
Absolutely.
Like and subscribe if you'd like to talk about being creative and living the creative life, and maybe you even had to stop it to do something else, and maybe you're coming back to it because lately, it seems the world is going to end, and people are like, hey, you know what? Fuck it. Let's do what we want to do.
That's it.
And, you know, hell to the rest.
When you're creative, I mean, if you're not creating, you're just not right. You just don't feel right. I mean, I've been...
Yeah, it's a form of depression.
For years now, you know, like, I've after the end of the things we talked about, and then my subsequent blue collar adventures. There's always that part of you that's just like, you're feeding your kids, you're doing what you got to do, you're paying the bills, but you're just like, man, there's just something not right. It's like the missing piece, So.
Right. Some people think you have to work 24 hours a day, and maybe you do, but maybe that has to be creative.
Yeah.
Or you have to supplement this to do that, whatever it is, but.
Yeah.
So look at us, a couple of old fucks, 30 years later, fuck it, let's record an album and do something good. We're not making money on it, and
just we don't care.
We just want to have fun and raise money. So, Jason, stay in the line after I end this here. But want to thank you, everybody, for coming in on episode 108 of Creativity with Jason Clark, my other brother from another mother. I have three of them: Jason, Rob, Paul. Leon's a close coming on behind it, but I just want to say, hey, I love you, buddy, and we'll see you soon. Jason has always been my little brother because I didn't have one, so I get the extra joy of making him uncomfortable. But anyway, this is Vince from Creativity and my buddy Jay. Say goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
All right, we'll see you soon. Take care, everyone. All right. Thank you.